Blog Talk Radio.
Wow, good evening and welcome to the one and only ScaryCast. This is Dr. John Stamey. It is so glad to be with everyone tonight. I'm calling in from clear but cold Myrtle Beach, and I'll tell you what, it's just kind of no fun out here. I always came down here for the warm and everything. But anyway, it's still beautiful to be here in Myrtle Beach. Always glad to be here. And just got a lot of great things going on. We were not with everybody because this past Thursday night was the terrible, terrible set of storms that came through. Tony Filosi, one of our co-hosts, he was busy on call with the rescue squad because he's part of the governor's team. So we just didn't feel like doing the show without Tony. But tonight we've got me and, of course, the wonderful Robin McCray. Robin, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, everyone. I'm doing good. It's been a hairy couple of days, but it's good tonight.
Yeah, I was talking with you earlier today and doing one of the great things that you do in a humanitarian vein. You were taking some dogs to the adoption to get them a good home, right?
We did, and we've got a couple of very interested people. I have one of my puppies that leaves tomorrow morning, and then right before we left, a four-week-old, and I'm being generous when I say four-week-old, puppy was brought in that was found left alone under a house for 2 days. Very, very cold, very, very malnutrition. So he is now at my house. And he's nice and warm now and has been rid of all the fleas that was on him and has a very nice full belly, and he's sleeping it off. So he now is here. Just a
great
little tiny ball of
fluff. What is his name?
Well, he's blue. He has baby blue eyes, and his entire coat is this beautiful bluish-gray color. So we named him Blue. And he's a little scared. He was, I think, the beginning stages of hypothermia when we got him, and very dehydrated, and he doesn't have enough teeth to be a solid food eater, so he is on canned puppy food, and he's got Pedialyte and water going into him, and he's doing really well tonight. He ate like a champ. He gets tiny amounts every few hours, so he's next to the bed so that Pat and I can rotate getting up with him during the night.
Well, good. Well, tell Blue that I said hello, and I can't wait to meet him next week.
Yeah, you will see him. He's a charmer, that one is.
Well, that's great, and it's wonderful the job that you do to help these poor puppies that just don't have a home where people can love them. So we're glad that you and Pat and the whole crowd there do. So thank you very much.
Thanks, John. And they love their Uncle John. They know who Uncle John is. Uncle John feeds cookies.
All I know is Chester knows who I am, and so I got to get down there and give Chester some cookies. Chester's kind of cool. He's my boy. So anyway, we need to take a picture of me with Chester for ScaryCast when I come down there.
I'm sure, because he is just his own unique individual. Is Chester?
Yeah, you know, people say their dogs are unique. This one is unique.
Yeah, he's a character, and he knows it. That's part of the issue.
he's just a little full of himself. I guess that's the best way to put it, right?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, tonight Pat was working with the puppy trying to get him to eat, and everybody had crashed because everybody was at work today. So I was trying to clean up from the dishes, and I'm thinking, God, I've got all this to do, no help. And here comes the little piglet. Climbs into said dishwasher and starts taking a snout and pushing the rack in. And I'm like, hey, I got help. It comes in the most bizarre ways, but I got help. So
the piglet whose name is Hamlet.
Hamlet.
What a perfect
yes.
name.
Yep,
that's
Mr.
Great.
Hammy. Well, or Piggy.
Hamlet's pretty cool. So anyway, that's a little bit about the menagerie at the house of Robin and Pat McCray. It's always wonderful to be there and hang out with the whole crew. So anyway, thanks for all you do. Well, I tell you tonight we've got a very interesting topic. And the title doesn't really explain. It's got a subtitle to it. So are you ready? Are you ready, Robin?
I'm ready. I'm ready.
The title is The Importance of a Bad Attitude.
Ah, there you go.
What on earth is that? And I'll tell you what it's about. It's about skeptics versus the paranormal people. And I'm about to get tired of hearing these silly arguments from the skeptics that just don't hold water, and they don't get out and do anything other than read a story and complain. That's all they do. They're not out there. You and I and Pat and Jan and the whole bunch, we're out there in the woods and the parking lots and in the haunted houses. We're out there doing our job being paranormal investigators. And these folks, they want to complain about everything, but they don't do anything. And
exactly.
This is a non-tribute night to them. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about them, and I've got a beef with them. And I'm probably, because the Lizard Man book, Lizard Man 101, is going to be finished next week. I'm pleased to have an interview with Lyle Blackburn on Monday, who wrote the Lizard Man book, Lizard Man, True Story of the Bishopville Monster. He wrote that about 2.5 years ago. And I've got an interview with Reginald Fullwood from Sumter, South Carolina. He actually produced the Lizard Man movie that came out 2 years ago. It did actually pretty well, and he's got some additional plans for that. So I'm going to talk with Reggie later this week, and then we're wrapped up. Lizard Man 101 is good to go and all that. So I couldn't wait. I mean, I just, when I got this title in my head, The Importance of a Bad Attitude, because that's about all the skeptics have is a bad attitude. They don't have any facts. They have this sheet of paper. I found this sheet of paper, Robin. And
So
here's what it says. Now, are you ready? Don't get burnt up when I tell you. It says quackery. Well, we know what quack is. It's like being a bad doctor. Quackery is a type of pseudoscience, any practice or remedy that has no compelling scientific basis for them to work. It includes questionable ideas and questionable products and services, regardless of the sincerity of the promoters. Now, here's the first thing I've got to say, and this really burnt me up, because I think you, as a lady who has done a lot of research and practiced a lot of holistic healing, you know about the mass effectiveness of acupuncture in China.
Right.
It's huge. It works. So some fella, and he wants to congratulate himself. His name is Martin Bridgestock. He's a professor from Australia. He wrote a book that he used to teach a class about the science. Get this. The science of being a skeptic. And it's called An Original Course Prompting Students to Think Critically About the Paranormal. And he was bragging that two of his students did some research, read some articles, and concluded acupuncture didn't work. Well, about 90% of all China would, I don't know, get real mad at him, because that's what they use to cure themselves. And and he was... This guy, Martin Bridgestock, won an award. Dr. Bridgestock and I are going to have a talk now. I'm going to tell you that. When I get the first half of this book written, we're going to have a talk. And I'm going to quiz him about his article. This article is just a little bit of nonsense. Sure, he may be a doctor. I want to find out what his publications are. I have 64 of them. North Carolina State University liked them. I don't know where he got his degree, but I want to find out more about his research. I want to find out about this course. I want to find out all about it, because we're going to have, you know, his American colleague here is going to have a serious talk with him. I don't really understand, you know, where he's going with this. And I don't like that. I say acupuncture. I know, actually, in Myrtle Beach, I know several acupuncturists who have helped a ton of people. I don't mean to be a bad Robin. Can I be a little shady on my next statement?
I think so. I think it's deserved at this point.
Well, I think acupuncturists have a higher rate of success than chiropractors, who are very good now. Chiropractors know what
right.
they're doing, but acupuncturists really can get in there to the nerve endings, to the areas where they can do something. And acupuncturists, in fact, a lot of chiropractors down here in Myrtle Beach are also acupuncturists. So, I mean, there's a commonality there, and I think it's very important. So it's like, why do the skeptics, they want to talk about skeptical inquiry, and they want to talk about the techniques. Well, most of the techniques that they talk about don't really hold a lot of water. So
right.
let me ask you this, and then I'm going to give an example that might not be complimentary. It will be kind, but not complimentary. So what experience have you had, Robin, with skeptics that you would care to share with us?
Well, first of all, especially in my field of research, whether it be the Bigfoot or the ETs or any of the cryptids, that's all I get. And, I, you know, this is my outlook on it. It is not my job to prove to them anything. I know my experiences are valid. I've had witnesses with me, countless witnesses with me, and they are my experiences. There's nothing that anybody's going to say that's going to change my mind on what I physically have gone through and witnessed, and, again, with other people present. So I always start out by saying, you know what, if you don't want to believe me, that's fine. I actually feel bad for these people to some degree. Sometimes it makes me mad, but I kind of feel bad because they are missing a whole part of the world that they do not even comprehend. And so I tell everybody, it's not my job to prove it to you. You make your own decisions. But if you're going to be one of these skeptics that sits in your living room and says, I don't believe this, I don't believe this, I don't believe this, prove to me that it's not real, because I'm the one out in the field. Okay, you're going to sit at home, and I have nothing against that. People stay home for a number of reasons. But until you're
That's
out
right.
there, until you are out there in the field and working with these things, what you tell me is non-existent. I will, out of respect, because I try to be a respectful person, I will listen to what you have to say, and if I feel there is some validity to any of it, I will be the first one to stand up and say, hey, I think that little tiny part you're talking about, that could be valid. Because I will give credit where credit deserves. I don't know everything. I don't believe that there are experts in this field. We're just all different people that have had different experiences. And
sure.
I will never
Absolutely.
Say I'm an expert. If anybody comes up and says they're an expert, get away from them as fast as you can, because they don't know crap. Because no matter how far into this you are, I promise you, there's another 1,000 layers to go. But don't sit in a chair or listen to the radio or whatever you want to do and tell me that what I've lived since I was a child, a toddler, is not legit. I mean, not only, like I said, have I had people with me. I went in years ago when I was younger because everybody kept telling me that these things couldn't exist. I went into a shrink's office and I'm like, okay, tell me I'm crazy. And I talked to her for I don't know how long, and two different ones I went in. And she said, I'm going to be honest with you. She said, I'm convinced. You are 100% honest. She said, I can't pick up anything about you that is delusional or untruthful. She said, I may not understand what you've gone through, but I have respect for the fact that you're honest in your conviction. And the other one I talked to said, you know what, why aren't you a shrink? Because you could come in and be a psychiatrist and you do really well. And I'm like, no, I know what I see. I know people will look at it, pick it apart and say, it's because this, this, and this. And he said, why are you here? And I said, because everybody keeps telling me they don't exist. And he said, well, I per se have not seen them, but he said, I will bet my last dollar on you. You know, I don't know what to tell people. I'm sorry that they haven't had the experiences that I've had. But I believe in my heart there's a reason they haven't, because these Bigfoots know people's hearts. They know their souls. And there's reasons they contact certain people and reasons they don't. And they have their reasons. That doesn't mean at some point in their life these people aren't going to have an experience. I'm just sorry that they haven't had it as yet. But don't crap on the people that have. You know, I'm sorry if you haven't had it, and hopefully for you one day you will. But don't come down on the people that have, because we're all you've got. And I told this to Jeff Meldrum when we were in Russia. He kept coming up to me and saying, if you're legit, if these were in your yard like you're saying all the time, then you would have had me to your house. And I told him flat out, I said, I mean, no disrespect for you, but there's no way I'm having you at my house. I've had other researchers. I've had other people that are prominent in this field, all of which can back up what I say. But no, I would not have you at my house because you're not somebody that I feel that they would like. You know, I mean, I have respect. No, and I don't mean that to be as harsh as it sounds. He may not be on the top of what I would want in a friend, and we really don't we don't agree on anything. I wish him well. I have respect for him in his field and for what he's accomplished. I'm not going to browbeat him or knock him down. I'm much better than he is about that subject. But at the same time, there's a reason I'm having what it is. And I told him, he said he didn't like contactees. And I said, I'm going to tell you something about contactees. We're all you've got, because everybody is running around trying to get them. And I appreciate what he's put into the research. I'm not denouncing that at all. He's worked very hard on this subject, and that should never be taken lightly or taken away from him. But if you want contact, if you want to know everything, if you want to know their life, their culture, their people, their families, there are hundreds and thousands of us contactees out there. Nobody is utilizing that. You don't need to come out and try to shoot one, okay? But we can get you the information that you want. And people don't want that. They want the truth. But when they get the truth, it's more than they can comprehend. And when they do get it, they look at it, and it's so because these are a human hybrid, but they're also multidimensional. They have paranormal abilities. That will blow anybody's mind, and I have respect for that. I understand that's difficult for people. Don't agree with it. Don't believe it. But don't crap on the people that live it, because there's going to come a point where you're going to want answers. And at some point, once that whole, you know, skepticism and, oh, my God, that can't possibly be real, wears off, the truth is there. And you're burning bridges with the very people that can get it for you. And that's not to say there's not hoaxers out there. I've met several of them. I have enough proof in my corner where anybody that knows me knows I don't hoax. I never have. I never will. I don't need to, nor would I want to. But the truth of the matter is there are people that do. So I see why people are skeptical. But again, I respect their position. But if I'm going to treat them respectfully and say, I'm fine with the fact that you don't have to believe me, but these are my experiences. They're valid. They're real. When you're ready and you're a place in your life to accept these things, that's fine. It may not be now, but later. But in the same token, have enough respect for me to understand it. This is what has gone on. You know, respect is a two-way street. Instead of yelling at me to prove it to you, okay, bring it. Prove it to me. Because I promise you I can trump every proof that you come into. Not to mention the fact that Melba Ketchum did the DNA study that you cannot be faked. And the people that say, well, yeah, it can be faked if it was contaminated. There were tests to prove that it was not contaminated, not by one lab, but by many. And it was all tested with robotic arms, not to mention the fact that the people involved turned in their own DNA samples to make sure it did not match any DNA that came up with those samples. So, you know, I say to the skeptics, you know, you're so busy flinging it at me to prove it to you when it doesn't get a rise out of me. It doesn't make me want to prove it to anybody. I'm like, just stay in your own little world because you're not ready for the truth yet. And when you grow up and you are, let me know. But prove it to me, because there's no way they can. You know, I mean, I've had them come up and put their hand on my shoulder. I've been, you know, a foot from them. In fact, tonight it was pretty comical. I have a tree cam, and I actually didn't put it out for them, to be honest with you. I put it out because of the dog next door. And I had it out on a tree in my backyard, and I walked out there today to pick it up. And the next door neighbor was out, and I walked next door, and I was talking to him. Went over, picked up the tree cam. I come in, and Pat was looking at the SD card. And within a minute after I walked by that camera, there stands a foot. And he was not tiny. I didn't even know he was out there. I was talking to the people next door. But, yeah, he's very large. And he was standing in the tree line. And I didn't know he was there. I wasn't really paying attention. I mean, I walked out there and the neighbor hollered to me and I was talking to him. Wasn't paying attention at all until we checked the trail cam. And I'm like, okay, this was a minute after I walked by it. You can see me walking by it. And then all of a sudden, boom, there he is. you know.
Yep.
We had, and this is, and this probably won't convince a skeptic, but I'm going to say it anyway. There's a big controversy on whether these guys are good or bad. And the truth of the matter is, like it or not, folks, they're a human hybrid. It's just a fact. And like us, there are good and bad. Now, I'm very blessed. I've gone out into the field and helped deal with some of the aggressive and bad ones, but I am very blessed that the ones around me are good. I'm not that we don't get an occasional bad guy in here, but for the most part, they're good. So yesterday morning, right after this big bad storm that we had been up most of the night with it because the animals were all freaked out. And we had some rather entertaining frogs that night. So we, Pat and I get up and we're laying in the bed, and it was actually 10 o'clock. And we were just being lazy. We didn't want to get up. We had an appointment around 12:30, 1 o'clock, and we were just laying there not wanting to move. And we were watching TV, and it felt like the whole end of my house shook, but only in my bedroom. The wall directly behind my head, something was pounding the living crap out of it. And then over on Pat's side of the bed by the window, they're pounding on that. And I heard it. Pat looked at it, and we kind of looked at each other. And at first, I'm like, okay, obviously from the wind, one of the trees fell on the house. And then it got quiet. And I said to Pat, I said, what was that? He said, I have no idea. It literally felt like somebody wrapped their arms around that whole corner of the house and shook it. But it wasn't like that in any other part of the house. It was just where the bed was at in our bedroom. And it kicked up again. And I'm like, what is going on? I looked out the bathroom window. I didn't see any trees down out there. But it kept on and off, on and off. So Pat and I said, we're going outside. So we go outside. He walked into the yard. I walked on the side of the house. There was not even a twig out of place. I mean, nothing. And by then, the wind's all done. Well, it was still windy, but it wasn't that bad. And I hear him say, oh, my God, come out and see this. So I go into the front yard, and I have this very large oak tree, which, John, you've seen. It's massive. And
okay.
There is an electrical line that goes from the post, one post on one side of the yard to the post on the other side of the yard. And there is nothing but these gigantic sparks flying everywhere out of my power line. And as they hit the ground, because there's all these dried leaves all around, it's setting the leaves on fire. And the wind had pretty much died down, but yet every time it set these leaves on fire, a small blast of wind would come just exactly where that smoke was, and it was billowing smoke, and it would blow it out. It was literally like somebody was standing over the top of it blowing it out every time one would light up. And
wow.
I mean, it was really bad. It was bad. And then I looked over on the side of the yard and on a different power line, because we have to go across the front and then down the side, a tree had snapped off and was on the power line, and it was all the way down to the ground. Now, that was potentially a very dangerous situation. I mean, we have flames coming out. We have the ground getting on fire, and we didn't know any of it. But because they are kind, because they care, maybe because they just were like, hey, you idiot, our woods are burning down, get out here, we got woke up. There's nothing else that can justify what went on, because nowhere else in the house was afterward, no earthquakes around, and this was pounding the living tar out of the wall that is directly behind the heads of our bed and then over on the side of the window by the bed. And it kept up until we went outside to see what was going on, and it has not happened again since. You know, I mean, fortunately, we called the electric company. They came out and they took care of it. But it could have potentially been very bad. And we would have had no idea. By the time we found out, it would have been much too late. Because we hadn't planned to go anywhere until like 12:30, 1 o'clock, somewhere 12 to 1, somewhere in there. So it would have been 2 or 3 hours later. The whole front yard could have been engulfed by then.
Wow. Amazing.
You know, so the skeptics can say what they want. But there is no other logical explanation for that. I called both my neighbors. Nobody was home that day. They were at work. There was nobody outside. There was not a branch that had fallen off a tree to hit the house. There was literally nothing there. But somebody made darn sure we knew to get up. Because and Holly was upstairs. And, of course, you know my house, John. The upstairs, my bedroom sticks off the house. There's not a floor above it.
Correct.
And Holly was in the upstairs bedroom, and it pounded so loud down here, it woke her up. That's how loud it was. I mean, this wasn't just a light bump. This was, you're going to get up, and you're going to get up now, because this is, we got problems, you know? So, I mean, was very grateful because I don't know what we would have done. We would not have known about it, and it could have been really bad. I mean, we live in the middle of the woods, and there's a 200-acre tree farm across the road, and the road's only, you know, maybe 20 feet wide, if that. And it could have been really bad.
You had no help at something going on, so it was
exactly.
Just fortunate. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's
so,
like,
yeah, I mean, you're out there, and so.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not like the fire department can get here quickly. We're on the outskirts of town. It takes a few minutes. And the thing, not only from them waking us up, but there was a wind out there. There was a wind, but it wasn't bad. But I found it very peculiar that as these sparks would come down and land on these dried leaves, they immediately, just a huge billowing cloud of smoke would come up from the ground and sparks where it was starting to ignite and light on these leaves. And then all of a sudden, there would be a big gush of wind directly on that smoke pile, and it would be burned out. But yet you wouldn't see the trees around moving. And it only happened when these billowing piles of smoke from the ground came up. And I mean, we kept watching it. Pat Wynn got a rake, and he's going to, like, I'm going to try to see if I can, you know, put this out. I'm like, you can't, because it's under these electrical wires that are shooting sparks all over the place. And I mean, this was snapping and popping and flames are shooting all over. And I'm like, you can't get under there to do anything. He's like, well, I can't let it burn up either. And as soon as he said that, I mean, all of a sudden, just on those smoking piles, you would see wind in a swirl. It was in a complete swirl right around him, and it would just dissipate the smoke and put it out. Now, if that's not help from somebody, nothing is.
Right. Well,
so
yeah,
I would
that's
love
part
for
of
the skeptics to explain that and explain exactly who, you know, bothered to wake us up and get us mobile to get out there. But these are things that these skeptics look at, and they're like, well, logically, it could be this, it could be this, it could be this. And I look at them and I say, logically, it could be a lot of things, but you don't want to take my theory, prove yours. The burden of proof is not on me. The burden of proof is on them. I already know what's real and what isn't. I've got pictures. I've got contact. I've had more experiences than I know what to do with. I already know the truth. I already know my truth. So you prove to me that mine isn't right, because I'm not going to be the one proving it. If somebody wants to know my experiences, I am more than happy to tell them what I've learned and share with them, share my photos, all of that. I'm more than happy to, because, you know, there's power in knowledge. So if I can, you know, answer questions for people or whatever, and John, you know me, I will do it all day long and all night long. But don't tell me that what I have experienced my entire life is false, because I know better. I've had too many witnesses with me when it's happened. So don't ask me to prove it to you. Prove it to me. You're the ones on your soapbox. You're the ones jumping up and down on the furniture. You prove it. Because the burden of proof is not enough. Because I'm not trying to make anybody believe anything. I can tell my story. I can tell what I know to be true.
Yeah,
but
you're just there telling your story, for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, when people ask me, is there a way you can prove it to me? The first thing I say is, you know, very respectfully, you know what, sweetie? I already know it's true. I can tell you what's gone on in my life, what I've learned, what the Bigfoots have taught me. But other than that, no, don't expect me to sit and try to prove it to you, because I would rather you try to prove to me that it's not true.
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, they can come see you. That's what it's all about.
Well, and most people that come to my house experience one thing or another. Whether it's a Bigfoot, a dogman, an ET, or a ghost, I mean, it usually, we had a craft over here the other night. It's the same one over and over again, and it's massive. Jan saw it. She went to go into town, and it was doing the same thing it did that night I saw. It was following, it was in the air, but it was following the road. And she called me, and she said, are you all right? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. Why? And she said, that ship's back. And she said, it's headed down the road towards the house. And I said, okay. But it was getting ready to storm. And most people that know a lot about the ETs and have a lot of experiences know that they do come in a lot, not just when it rains or storms, but a lot of times they'll use that as cover when they come in.
Amazing. I've never had much experience with that. Certainly the Bigfoot there at your house. I mean, all the skeptics should just come on over and see what's going on there. But I doubt if they will. They're too busy writing articles, getting paid for their articles, and not experiencing things. And they can hear
that
here on the show.
Yeah, and that was one of the problems I had when Melba did the paper. You know, this woman sacrificed her entire life for this. And when she got into it, she had no idea what they were. She was simply trying to identify something that people had brought samples in and said, you know, whatever this thing is, it's taking stuff out of our barn, it's running through the yard, it's doing this, this, and this. And that's how she got into it. And once she found out, oh my gosh, this is so different, it's so unique, nobody knows what these things are, she wanted to pursue it. She didn't care what the DNA came back. It wasn't about, I'm going to prove these are a human, because that was the farthest thing from her mind. But again, you can't change what's true, especially when it comes to DNA. And so that's how it turned out. But we had so many people, and the part that made me mad on a lot of it is journalists or whatever that are in the public eye like that, criticize and shred it. These people, number one, had no scientific background. They couldn't have read that paper if their life depended on it, let alone know what it meant. Two, never left their office other than to do an interview. Had never done any of this research, had never been a part of it. And they slandered her so bad that people started to listen to them. And I was like, they have no credentials. They have no qualifications. They don't know what any of this is. And honestly, they could come up and bite them in the butt and they still wouldn't know. And to me, that's a travesty. If you're going to have an opinion and it doesn't agree with mine, I can respect that all day long. If you've done your due diligence, if perhaps your experience is different than mine, I have all the respect in the world for that, because I think we learn from each other. Like, my way is not the only way, you know? So I take it all in, and I appreciate if people have different experiences and different ideas. I'm not infallible, you know? I mean, I'm not right all the time. All I can do is talk about what I've learned and what I've witnessed. So I appreciate other people's experiences.
Mm-hmm. Now, Robin, I've got to ask you a question. What is that low male voice about every 2 or 3 minutes that comes in with a syllable or two?
I'm not sure. I'm hearing. Unless it's one of the foots that are popping in and out, because that happens a lot as well. And they are outside. Like I said, the one was out there, and I got him on camera earlier. Pat tried to get him to talk, and he said, I don't want to talk right now. It's like, okay. When you want to talk, give us a holler, you know.
It's a very, very deep male voice. One or two syllables. Not exactly. But it's very interesting that it's happening.
My guess it would be because of the topic that we have. And they do get very frustrated. And you notice that there's a pattern where about once every 3 or 4 years, there is a big burst in sightings, in contact, and that type of thing. It's because they have patiently waited thousands of years for our people to pull their head out of their butt and acknowledge that they exist and that they are real, and, you know, not live in this world where they're running around getting shot at constantly. And what they do, and I've noticed this since I was a kid, there seems to be a correlated pattern where for 2 or 3 years, they're still active. I mean, people still have sightings and contact. But as far as the overall population, it kind of settles, and it's relatively quiet, and we may not have as much contact or people coming forward with sightings. And then after 3 or 4 years, it booms again. And basically what it is they're ready. They wanted to come out before, but then people don't accept them, and they go back into hiding. Now, and John, you know this about me. When I did the conference in Russia, which was either 2011 or 12. And I came back. I did like two really small conferences for a friend, and I went quiet. I went back underground. I went back to staying with my foot all day long. And I was perfectly happy. They walked freely around my yard. They were always up to something, and it was wonderful. And I had no desire to be doing the podcast and the conferences and everything. And it wasn't that I didn't have offers. I did. I just turned them all down. There wasn't any point. People weren't ready to hear it. And then I met you. And Igor was supposed to do a conference with you and couldn't make it. And you and I had been talking. And the Foots were the ones that said, you need to talk to them. Tell them the truth about us. And I was like, guys, I've been underground for years. And they're like, we want to try. When Melba did the study, I met Melba because I was told by the Foots to contact her that she needed help. And I said, I know nothing about science. I mean, I'm not even in her league. She's probably the most intelligent person I've ever met in my life. And I'm like,
she's a really smart lady.
And I was like, what is she going to want me to do for her? And they just said, find her. So I knew a friend that had contact with her. And I said, listen, this is what I'm getting told through MindSpeak. And I don't know what I can do to help her, but give her my number. So she called and we talked. And she said, if you can just help me with scheduling and answering calls and emails. And she said, that would be fantastic. And I'm like, I'm in, you know, count on me. You can, I'll do it. So we did this for a couple months and she contacted me and she said, Robin, I got to ask, why did you never ask me what the results were? She said, everybody bugs me 24 hours a day and wants the results. You never ask. I said, I already know. And she said, well, how do you know? And I said, I just asked them. So I told her what they said, and she said, that's exactly right. That is what it is. And so we've, you know, now she's like a sister to me. I walk through the fires of hell for her, not even bad an eye. And she's the same way when it comes to me. And I just feel like my life is better having her in, and I'm very, very blessed to have her. I absolutely adore her and the work that she's done. But the thing of it is these guys, they keep trying. Now, there are sectors of them that want nothing to do with humans. They stay up in the mountains for a reason. They don't want to be bothered. They don't want anything to do with us. We've done nothing but hurt them. And so they do stay away. And there's some aggressive ones that are aggressive because they want to be left alone. But there's also a very large number that want that contact, you know. And for years, it's gone against their culture and against their laws. And they're just now certain clans, different sections of them or sectors of them are coming forward and they want that information out. And so now we've been blessed by you, John, where you've given us the tools to have a voice. So there's myself, there's Janice Carter, we have William Henry, Don Tart, my husband Pat, and we are going out and we're talking at these conferences, not because we have an ego or feel like we need to be in front of people, but the only way people are going to learn about them is if they're given the information. So people can take the information, they can discard it, they can believe it, they cannot. You can never make anybody do what they don't want to do. All you can do is control yourself. So we're putting the information out there. We're putting out what the Foots want out there, and we're spreading that message. We're trying to educate people. And they can choose to do with the information what they want. That is entirely up to them. You can't make anybody do what they don't want to do. And you can only be responsible for your own actions. So what happens with them after that information is up to them. But I've met some beautiful, beautiful people at your conferences that truly just want to know. And a lot of them I still have contact with today. And I, some of them that have their Foots around them, I'm working with them to help educate them on how to build that better relationship. You know, there's one absolutely beautiful woman that came in, an older woman, that had several things happen to her with the ETs. I was able to zero in immediately and tell her what was going on, and she was floored. And I still talk to her today. And it's a blessing to me. I'm honored to work with these people. You know, I don't look at it as, oh, look at me at all, because I just don't have that ego base. But I'm blessed that they, and humbled that they at least trust me enough to come to me and say, okay, can you share what you've learned? And I will do that all day long and twice on Sunday for anybody. But when it comes to the skeptics, I don't. You're not going to convince them of something that they don't want to know. And a lot of the researchers...
That's what I think. And, you know, not trying to jump in, but it's like someone said to me, well, John, how do you handle skeptics? And right, wrong, left, right, up, or down, I say, well, I don't handle them. I just ignore them. I mean, because people that have already made up their mind, I'm not going to waste my breath on them. I'm just, you know, I'm sorry. I don't mean to sound elitist or anything, but I mean, you know, I've done enough research and I've talked to enough people. If someone doesn't want to listen to what I've got to say, I'm fine with ignoring them.
Right. Well, and the other thing I find too is, these people will come and they'll want information because they want to see you fail. They want to see you not do it. everybody, it seems, and I'm not going to say everybody, that's a bad choice of words, but a large majority of the people in this field want to be the one to make the big discovery. They want to be the one that has better contact than another person. There's always going to be somebody that has better contact than another person. That's just the way it works because they're all individuals. They're all different ones that are contacting people. But these people will go out and say, oh, I want the information. I want the information. What they're not saying is, I want the information, but only if I'm the one that claims it. And I'm the only one that, you know, I'm the one that found it. Because when other people present to them exactly what they're asking for, they destroy it. They say they want pictures. Give them crystal clear pictures, and they will tear it apart every single time. It's a hoax. They don't care if God himself is standing there pointing the finger to them. They are not going to believe these pictures. They wanted samples. They don't believe the DNA in the hair. They don't believe it on the flesh. They don't believe it on the urine or the toenails or the saliva or the blood. And they don't believe it because it didn't come from them. But if they have that, and I've seen this happen over and over again, if they have these things, if they have an experience, all of a sudden it's written in stone. These are the people that I have the problems with because everybody's got different experiences. Relish in that, learn from each other. Doesn't mean they're not valid, but you have a lot of these researchers that they want all this information and they get on their soapbox and by gosh, they're going to find it. But it's only relevant and it's only true if it comes from them. But yet they're the same ones that are hooting and hollering, we need to know the truth, we need to tell the truth. But you give it to them and they don't want the truth. They don't want the truth unless it's their discovery. And that's what happened, a lot of it, with Melba. I mean, not only that, but then we had the government involvement. But that's a lot of what happened. And I've watched it happen to researchers repeatedly. And it's like, I post once in a while in the Facebook group because I admin some of them. I don't post a lot because there's no point. Now, the people that I'm close with, the people I work with, they've all seen my photos. You know, I've given them enough information. They know I'm as legit as it's going to get. But, you know, you get to the point where some of these people, these skeptics, it's one thing to say, I want to know the truth. It's another to actually want the truth and listen to it. So I just don't have, it's not that I don't have patience. I don't waste my time with it. I just don't. And every time they come at me and say, you need to prove to me, I'm like, wait a minute. I don't have a problem at all. Why am I proving anything? I mean, there's nothing that I have to prove to anybody. I've already proven it to myself, and my opinion is the only thing that matters to me. You know, I want to hear everybody's experiences, and most of the time, you know, if I feel that this is an honest person, even if it's something I haven't experienced, I'll jump on that bandwagon with them. I don't care if I feel they're honest.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to have every experience in the world. But learn from each other. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Instead of building each other, breaking each other down, we're supposed to be building each other up and learning from each other, not for our sakes, but for the sakes of the Bigfoot, because those are the ones that are getting the raw end of the deal.
True. That's 100% right there. And, you know, it's like for those of us, you know, I have my experiences. It's like I don't even worry about it anymore. I mean, I just like, oh, this is great. And then it's over. It happens and it's over. And I just go on. And I think, you know, after talking with you, the more you like that, the more experiences you're going to have. If you sit around waiting for it, they're not going to happen. But if you just go on and do your thing, Lord only knows that they'll start happening all the time. Yeah.
Well, because I think for me, with anything that happens with me and I get all these people that come down on it, it doesn't faze me. It doesn't take away the euphoria of having had the experience I had. You know, jealousy is an evil thing. And people, even though they won't admit that they're jealous of something, they are. And the ones that aren't jealous, they just want to be the one to prove the big thing. You know, I think we all need to quit running around trying to prove it and just learn from the experiences that are out there. It's already been proven, and they're not going to listen to it, which is really sad because, you know, the whole world wanted to know, And then they were given it on a silver platter with not one genome, but three, which is more than anybody's ever done and still has never been able to accomplish that. And they don't care. And there are other scientists that have now gotten basic DNA that supported the Ketchum study. But because of what's been done to Dr. Ketchum, they're not going to come forward. They're not going to have their lives and their careers destroyed. And I don't blame them. So, but it's very comical to me that people say, well, nobody else has ever gotten that. Oh, that is so wrong. many have gotten that DNA.
Yeah, and one sighting that really amazes me is the one from Robert Shipton up in the Himalayas when he was taking the alternate route to the top of Mount Everest. And he had his camera with him, and he had a friend of his. They were both serving as joint guides. It was just the two of them. I mean, dangerous as all get out. And then they just come across this gigantic footprint. They take a picture of it. Nobody says a word. Everybody believes it is true. It's on the front cover of Time magazine. And then everybody just starts talking about it. And I mean, and that's the one, I think that's the oddest to me, because everybody wowed about it, and then they just kind of forgot it. It was considered as real as it gets. And then just, it was like, well, okay, great. And then everybody started worrying about fakes and this and this and this. So, I mean, it's just interesting. You know, you pick up on things. It's like, why did everyone forget about Eric, I'm sorry, not Robert Shipton, Eric Shipton. Why did everybody forget about Eric Shipton's great photographic discovery? That photo sold for $5,000 in the early 60s. Do you know how much $5,000 was in 61? Oh, my goodness. That was just like
unbelievable.
That was like, it was. And then it just, everybody stopped talking about it. Okay. And just, you know, that's when you would have thought that would have been the catalyst to really start research and the exploration to work with Bigfoot. At least I would have, just done me, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing to me that people don't want to believe it, but yet let the memorabilia come out, let the pictures like the Shipton ones, the Patty ones, and people will pay top dollar for it. If they think they can make a buck out of it and commercialize them and make money off of their, you know, their existence, but then they won't believe that they exist or the truth about them. And I just think that's criminal. You know, nobody has a problem making profit off of them, making that money off of them, but then come down to, this is what they are, and oh, that's not them. But if all these individuals that would say that could make a dollar off of them, they'd back at 110%. And everybody kept thinking that Melba made money. Melba didn't make a dime, not one dime.
Well, it's like a project that I'm working with Eric Hollowell down in Tallulah Falls, Georgia. You know, he works at that school, and he's got that wonderful, wonderful casting. Well, he and I are spending about $25 a piece, and we're going to learn how to make copies of that cast so that we can sell them to folks for about $25 a piece, not the 100 and 200 copies per cast. But you know, there are people, and I said, you know, a copy of this cast is the world's greatest talking point. It's the greatest thing to talk talk with people about. Oh, here's a copy of a Bigfoot, of a Bigfoot print, and you know, for $25, grab one and you start talking to people about it. That'll get your social interaction with Bigfoot going. $25. It takes work to do this.
Right, but the thing of it is at least if you're going to do that, you know they're real. You've had your own experiences. You've seen them at my house. You've seen them, on your own. You've seen them. And you know for a fact that they're there, and you would never do anything to hurt them, to profit off of them. It's all right to make a living. They don't mind that. It's when you're making all this money, but you're really not supporting them, and you don't believe in them and their way. That's a problem. You know, I mean, you don't get to make money off of them and then turn around and say they don't exist or they're just an animal running through the woods or, you know, all this other crap that's out there.
Oh, my goodness. You're saying this, and I'm just laughing. And I'm thinking, boy, the things that I have seen, my goodness, you know, it's like,
you're no fighter, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I want to do is I want a $25 copy of this thing so I can use it as a talking point to speak with other people, because that's a
fun
thing.
And that's fun, yeah. And, you know, it makes me so mad because I used to have this huge collection of past. I mean, I took past for I don't know how long. In fact, I have one of an infant, and I have it at my house. But I had all these casts, and when I went and I spoke at the conference in Russia, in Siberia, I drugged all those heavy casts because Igor asked me to. I drugged them all the way to Siberia. I was so miserable. Those things were so heavy because, you know, they're made out of plaster, and they're heavy, and they're big. I had them from several of my core group, and I've got pictures of a lot of them. I mean, it's not like I don't. But once I was there, we went to a village called the Shore People, and they have a museum there that they opened to support the Yeti or the snowman, and they wanted casts. So I was like, all right. So I gave them a couple of my casts, and then we did the conference, and some people there wanted to take them for a museum, and then Igor wanted some for the Darwin Museum, so I gave them to him for that. The only one I didn't part with was my baby one, because that was the first cast I ever did, and it was the first baby I ever had contact with. And so I wouldn't give that one up. And I had two left, and they got broke on the plane. Went home, and I was quiet for, my gosh, 7 years maybe, you know. And now we're back in it again. I'm like, I really need to start casting again. John Vandernagel, God rest his soul, before he passed, him and his wife came out and spent 2 or 3 days at my house. And I gave him some of my casts as well. And he saw the ones I took to Russia, and he was so sweet. He was like, you know what, these are some of the best casts I've seen. He said, you know what, Dr. Meldrum needs to take this seriously. He said, show it to him. And I did show it to him, and he did not give me a very warm response. And I never showed him anymore. But he didn't say anything. He just looked at him and then pushed him back at me and walked off. But, you know, John thought they were wonderful. And in fact, that was why when he was in the States, he asked if him and his wife would come stay. And so they came and stayed for 3 or 4 days and saw quite a few things. And in fact, when he came, he brought me more plaster. I was like, oh my gosh, I've got so much plaster. And he took several of my casts. In fact, one was one of a male that had a crippled foot. And I just had a ton of them. And now it's really sad because through the course of time, and I had some break in Russia, and I had some other ones that I had in my storage unit, and the roof caved in on it and destroyed everything in it. But I still have my baby footprint. So I need to get, we find footprints out in the yard a lot, but there's so many leaves and stuff right now. It's like, you can see where it's at, but it's just not really conducive for a good print. I wish they'd leave more prints out in the sand and the dirt in the road, because those are easy to cast. You can cast those all day long. But I mean, I've taken pictures of them, but I haven't, you know, I haven't cast it anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can say this, and I guess I hadn't told you. I have, you know, whenever I go down to Clayton, Georgia, I have a boatload of people come up to me. I mean, they recognize me, and they always tell me where to go. And I got 3 new hot spots to go to. And
yeah.
I can about guarantee you that there are casts. There will be casts that could be made there. I'm going to bring Eric Hollowell with me. We're going to meet up toward the end of this month. And I'm going to bring him with me, and I think we're going to try to take some. So I'll certainly let you know. And he and I are working to learn how to copy casts, because it's a little bit of a trick to do it right, because the plastic can be porous, you know, and so he's learning how to do that, which is great. And so we can start sharing some of these things. But it's a little trick. But I've had several people, it's just funny, you know, I walk into a Food Lion and someone says, you're the guy with the Bigfoot conference. Yes, I am. And I always know, I have a pad, and I know that means here comes the story, you know?
Yeah.
And The skeptics should be walking with me when I go to Food Lion in Clayton. They'd find out. It's just funny. But anyway, it's all good. And I guess I want to say it's important to share these stories just between us. I mean, we don't, you know, Robin, it's funny, as much out in the woods and stuff that we get to do with your family and stuff, we don't always get to share these stories until we sit down here on ScaryCast, which is, you know, just because we're busy and stuff like
yeah,
that. And
I didn't even get a chance to tell you
about my experiences at Lake Burton last week. I mean, I just hadn't had time. So, I mean, you know, we'll definitely catch up this week and I'll fill you in on all that. And you know, it's good to get to talk. I mean, not all skeptics are bad, but they just need to be mindful that we're sitting there having our experiences too. And if you're not having the experiences, maybe you're not out there doing what you should do. That sounds like some advice my grandmother would give, but it's the truth.
Yeah, and there are skeptics that, in all fairness, they may be a skeptic, but they're a respectful skeptic. And I have a lot of respect for that. And they'll come up to me and they'll say, well, I'm not really sure I believe it. And the first thing I say to them is, that's okay. You know, that's perfectly fine. At least you want to know what, you know, what I'm saying. You don't have to agree with it, but at least you're respectful about it and say, well, I really don't believe it, or I just think they're flesh and blood. And I do have friends that say, no, they're flesh and blood. Perfectly fine. We don't have to agree. And that's where I think there's a big misconception. You don't always have to agree with somebody because you don't want to be led around by the nose. You want to form your own thoughts and you want to, you know, come to things in your own terms. And that's fine. I have full support of that and respect for that. But just don't disqualify other people that have had the experiences and feel a different way. Like, I have no problem with someone not agreeing with me. I have friends. We don't agree on everything about them. That doesn't change how I feel about them, or that, and it doesn't change that I think that there's validity in their research. You know, we learn from each other. And there's been a lot of people that have come up to me at these conferences and said, well, I appreciate everything you said. I just don't know that I'm there yet. And I'm like, that's perfectly fine. You don't have to be where I'm at because you haven't gone through what I've gone through. So there's no reason you should be where I'm at. But as life goes on, as you see more, as you hear more, if possibly you have some experiences, then maybe someday down the line, you might be on my side. But if you're not, that's okay. As long as we treat each other well, that's all that matters at the end of the day. Nobody has to believe anything they don't want to believe. But I honestly believe, and I preach this to everybody, so here I go on my soapbox, you know, simple human compassion, simple caring for another human being, respect, these are all simple things that take no amount of effort to give. Common decency, this is what our world lacks. You know, be mindful of it. You don't have to agree with me. I'm fine with that. It's not going to hurt my feelings. It's not going to get me upset and keep me up at night because I may not agree with you or I may not agree with somebody else, but I respect your right to believe differently. You know, you can be on two sides of the fence and be a decent human being, but when you get a lot of these skeptics that are just vile, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I have my beliefs, but I don't recall ever attacking people. You know, and even like when I mentioned Dr. Meldrum today, I do have respect for his work. I think that he works incredibly hard. I think that he has brought a lot of information for people. He has earned a lot of respect from people. He may not be my cup of tea, but I already know that I'm not his either. So, you know, that's fine. I don't hang around with him. He doesn't hang around with me. And so that's fine. But I will always give him the respect that he deserves.
Yeah, that's all you can do is give someone the respect that they deserve and just see how it pans out. So anyway, I think we've had a good and instructive conversation on Skeptic. I've got a lot more. I've got about 400 pages here to read. I've read about a third of it so far. I've got a lot more to go as I start putting this little book together. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be instructive for everybody. As long as I can help instruct people, that's what I like to do. It's part of my job and my world. So I do want to say, you know, Robin, thanks for being here. I'm so glad that you were all up to do a scary cast tonight.
Oh, always.
I know I was
always.
Too. And now we will be back on Monday night at 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. for the one and only Murder 123. Don't know who the subject will be, but we'll have an interesting subject. We'll be working on the dossier tomorrow, and I'll be getting that out to you and Tony and Devin, and I think we're going to have a blast. So I wanted to say thank
awesome.
You so much for being here, and we'll be doing our research, and we'll be doing our research. We'll be doing our fact finding and everything tomorrow, so that we can give everybody an interesting show. And I know Tony's got some
wonderful.
Things. I've got a couple of things I've been working on, and we'll see. So thanks to everybody for listening to us on Scarycast.
Yeah, wonderful having everybody listen.
Yep, as I said, Devin and Tony are on special assignment. They will be back soon. Thank you, Robin. I will be back. And
yeah, thank
so
you,
welcome.
John.
Yeah.
Everybody take care.
We're welcome to everybody that came to listen to us on Scarycast. And just listen to our rebroadcast of all of our other shows. It's on Scarycast.com. This one will be up for those that just joined us. It'll be up in about 10 minutes on Scarycast.com. It'll be at the very top. So go watch us. We'll talk to you soon. We'll talk to you Monday night for Murder 1.
Take care.
2, 3. Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
That was pleasant.